All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fuck nicks? What's happening? It's me, Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. This is me, Mark Maron, after working. I was on set today. I'm sorry, how are you? Everything all right? I'm out in the world in this fucking COVID tsunami working like a fucking idiot because I chose to do so. I chose to believe that protocols were in place that will protect me on this set. I chose to believe people who told me you'd probably be safer on a movie set than you would be going to Trader Joe's or Ralph's. I chose to do it. I did not know when I chose to do it that it would be the fucking escalating peak of the plague. But now I'm in it, and I have to accept my choices and do the work. I'm grateful to be working, but terrified on another level, but I've let that go because I made the choice, and they do seem to have their shit together with the masks and the shields and the testing. Godspeed, God willing, I will not get this fucking bug. And I didn't start thinking about it again until the end of the day. I got up at 5, had to drive an hour and 15 minutes out to the edge of the desert to this little shitty hotel, this rundown old dump of a hotel that is the set for the next week or so. I'm only shooting 11 days on the movie. And for some reason, it's not unfamiliar. The Glow Hotel was a shitty little hotel. You're always wondering, like, do people live here? And it's sad, but that's where we're out there. That's where we're at, out there in the dust, on the edge of the world. And I got to be honest with you, man, and it saddens me. But I think most people in this country live in borderline squalor. And it's fucking disturbing and unfair and sad. But there we are out there making a movie. It's a human story about a woman with trouble. And I've been working with Andrea Riceborough, who's sort of a savant, a genius, a great actress, British person, and Andre Royo, who you know from this show and from The Wire, from Empire. That guy's a live wire. Speaking of wires, he plays Bubs, but he's my buddy and my kind of my partner in this movie. So I'm hanging around a lot with Bubs, with Andre. Great guy. I couldn't have asked to be hanging out with a better person in the downtime. The only problem is I got to do a Texan accent, which I'm doing. I'm just doing it. I don't give a fuck. I laid it in place. I did the work. I did the dialecting with the dialect coach. I got a little primer. I got a little page of things I got to think about when I do it. And I do it, and I try not to do it up in my nose where it sounds like I'm doing a impression of somebody from Texas. But it's going well, and I'm glad I took the gig. It's scary, but it's nice to be around people. I know that it's dangerous and maybe not the smartest thing I ever did in my life, but like I said, the protocols are in place. Safety is being focused on immensely. There's nobody on the set without a mask and mostly without a shield ever, except for actors when they're doing their scenes. I get tested every other day, it seems. And hopefully I won't get it. And I feel like I'm doing okay work. I didn't know what I had in me anymore. We've been in this quarantine situation for a long time. But I didn't know if I could still work with people or get into the zone and do the acting. But as I said the other day, I'm on set and I'm like, I know what this is. I know how to do this. I'm familiar with this profession. I am a professional in this show business thing. And the director seems very happy. He seems to be getting what he wanted out of me. He ordered a Mark Maron. He's getting the Mark Maron. Did I mention today on the show here, Brad Williams is on the show. Brad is a comedian. He's a little person. He's a dwarf. I was told it's okay to say dwarf by Brad Williams. You may have seen his stand-up specials, Fun Size or Daddy's Issues. And he's also appears in the Netflix stand-up series, The Degenerates. And he was the topic or the subject or the launchpad of one of the funnier moments I've ever had on radio. Not me personally, but bore witness. One of the funnier moments that I've witnessed on radio with Anthony Cumia before he went completely sour when he was a funnier clown. But I talked to Brad about that. Man, what a day. A lot of pages, a lot of scenes. It got to the point where the last thing we were shooting today, I had to drive up and get out of a truck. Me and Andre had to drive up and get out of a truck. And I had one line. The line was, so did it go okay? Everything go okay? Man, but everything gets rolled into motion. We had Transpo move the truck. We got in the truck. All the gears were going. Everyone's on set doing the thing. We got a moving vehicle. I fucking drive that thing up. And I get out and I deliver my line to Andrea, who's playing Leslie. And I say, everything go okay? And then I stopped and like, fuck, no accent. Like, and it was almost as if no one caught it. I'm like, we got no accent. That was me. It was just Mark. Can't have that. Back up the truck. I forgot to put on my accent face. But it's going well. But it's weird what I get freaked out about. Like, you know, I did some, I got to sign a, when I was on Glow, I signed a nudity waiver. Is that what you say? That I had to do that. Because if those women were going to show anything, then it had to be equal and I had to show whatever they asked me to show. Fortunately, as some of you may know, it was my ass. And there was one, not really a sex scene, but partial nudity. But I showed my ass. It's there. I walked around set with a dick sock on. And that was okay. I was okay to deal with that. But I'm doing this movie and there's one scene where I got to eat a TV dinner. And I was like, oh my God, I don't know if I can fucking do that. Is there any way around me eating a TV dinner? Because we got to do a bunch of takes and I got to eat Salisbury steak from a TV dinner. I was more freaked out about that than showing my ass on camera. Even my cock, maybe. I don't know. That would have been a little hard. No, I mean, it probably wouldn't have. Damn it. I didn't mean to do that. It didn't. I'm not even going to play it out. But I had to really kind of come to grips with eating a Salisbury steak from a fucking TV dinner. Fortunately, they made one special for Andrea, who has meat issues. So they made a gluten-free veggie one. So I was able to take some of that as opposed to the real Salisbury steak. But I did more eating on camera this time than I ever have. And I try to avoid it at all costs. Because if you eat on camera in a scene, then every time you do a take, you got to remember where the fuck you ate. Like, there's not enough going on in the world. I'm happy to be working. I really am. It's really exciting. And it's so fucking nice. It's amazing how long it's been to be around that many other people. It doesn't feel that different. It's just everyone's wearing masks. So do you guys have the Citizen app? I don't know what the hell I got it for. I think it was a fire thing. I think my friend Dan said it's good for fire updates. But now I got on here and if you think you live in a good neighborhood, get the Citizens app. You don't know what the fuck is going on in your neighborhood. And I don't know whether it's like promoting entertainment. Because I got to fight myself sometimes, man. Just out of nowhere, you'll get a notification from the Citizen app, and it's like a naked man running around Trader Joe parking lot with a knife, upset that it's not open yet. And it's like, part of me is like, holy shit, that's crazy. And the other part of me is sort of like, I wonder if I leave now, if he'd still be out there when I get down there. Because I kind of like to see that. And then sometimes there's just things come up, and it's like, is that really... Did someone call that in? Man with indigestion at Glen Oaks and Brand on the corner bus stop. I don't know if that's, is that really something I should, do I need to know that? That doesn't seem like a big deal. Fellow with funny head walking through the Bank of America parking lot Nope. Don't need to know that. Five gunshots heard. And then sometimes the story doesn't even go on. Man talking to his penis sitting in front of Walgreens. Now that I got to get to. What time did that start? That sounds like an interesting one-person show. I started a conversation with somebody on set today. And, you know, you just never know, man. You just never know. I was talking to some person who I knew from another show. You know, we're just talking about the world for 2 seconds. She's like, I'm a little worried about communism. I'm like, what? She's like, yeah, I talked to some people that I know, a couple of people I know from Cuba said it's happening. And I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, communism. I'm like, in America? Yeah, it's going communist. I'm like, what are you even talking about? She's like, well, I don't know. I'd like to hear your opinion. I'm like, this doesn't sound like one of those opinion talks. This sounds like cuckoo time. And then I realized, like, there's a few questions you can ask when somebody says something like that. When somebody says something provocative that you're not sure where they're going with it, though I got a pretty good idea. There just should be like a quiz where you can just be like, hey, like before I get into this discussion with you, can I just ask you a couple questions? Do you believe in global warming? Uh-huh. Do you believe that vaccines work? Do you believe there is a deep state? Do you think there was election fraud? Like, I had 2 out of 4. You could do 2 out of 4 of those. You can sort of go like, all right, you know what? Thank you for answering those questions with the yes or no part of this. And I think I'm going to pass on the bigger discussion. Because, I don't know, it's time I'm not going to get back. And you're dum-dum. But as I said, I don't know where the person I was talking to, I don't know where that was going because I pulled out. I pulled the ripcord before I even got into it because I can get pretty worked up and, you know, you ain't going to change any minds, you know, especially the ones that are on lockdown. I've known Brad Williams for a long time. He's a funny man. He's a little person, which is exciting. This is the first time I've talked to a little person on the show. So this is a first, a historic first. And as I said earlier, you can see his specials, Fun Size, Daddy Issues. He's been on The Degenerates. He's got, you know, we're just going to do the thing that we do here. Comedian talk. This is me and Brad Williams. It's so rare to have people in person.
I know, it's weird, right?
Yeah. I mean, I see people, but I don't do this much. I don't do the podcast with humans that much.
No one's coming over here. They all do the Zoom stuff with you.
They do.
Yeah, it's you know, it's weird. Do you find yourself when you actually have a personal moment with either like a gardener or someone who works fast food, you like hang on to the conversation a little too long because you're like,
humans.
Interpersonal communication.
Yeah, we're talking like people.
I miss this. Yeah. I miss you. I've never met you before in my life. I miss this.
You're so important to me right now. Yeah, no, I find that. Like, thank you for bringing me these macarons your wife made. Now I got to try one on mic because people love that more than anything. They love when you eat on mic.
Is this like some weird ASMR?
They fucking hate it. There's some people where you eat on mic and it's like it's the worst thing. It's like nails on a chalkboard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
God, they're great.
Oh, well, she's a great baker.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that her thing?
I mean, it's one of her things.
It's not a profession.
Yeah, yeah. No, she's a behavioral therapist.
Oh, man. How's that helping you?
Great.
Are you behaving yourself?
Yes. Well, like, I grew up, my dad's a lawyer, so I'm just used to not winning arguments. And it's just a nice little, I went from living with my dad and never winning an argument, and then I live with my wife, and she has trained me to lose arguments because she's a behavioral therapist. I accept defeat well. And then and also we're comics, so we're right. Used to bombing. We're used to being told no, yeah. and we're used to walking into a club owner's office and being like, hey, I sold 200 tickets. They're like, you sold five. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Bye, thanks. Okay. So the rest was paper. No problem. Did you guys make your money, though? Did you guys do all right?
As long as you guys are good.
You're going to have me back, right?
Okay.
Oh, the worst. I don't miss that shit. I just read that book. Did you read that book by that kid?
Oh, which one?
Sam Talent.
No, I haven't read it yet.
Do you know about it?
Yeah, I know all the comics are talking about it.
Yeah,
I gotta start reading.
There's comics in it. He kind of blends real life with the fiction.
Mm.
So there's like these weird appearances by guys like Rick Kearns. I mean, that's a deep cut, man.
Rick Kearns.
Hey, Maron, what's going on?
Not a lot of stories about Rick Kearns going around.
Well, I think there are plenty of stories about Rick Kearns going around, but nobody knows them.
That's what I loved about the Comedy Store doc, is that it dove into some people that aren't. Yeah, we all know Letterman, Kinison.
Yeah,
but we all know those stories.
Sure, Viv.
But then they did some deep cut stuff.
The Freddie Prinze, Jimmy Walker thing, where they go over to John Travolta's with that crossbow. I mean, fuck, dude, that was the best. Like, can you imagine getting that call? We're going over there. And I'm like, what? But you go. Like, that was the funny thing about Walker. He's like, he went.
Yeah, he went. He like, because what do you do? Say no?
Yeah, you got to go.
No, you got to go and at least witness a murder or maybe stop it.
I don't know, but Kearns, there's a great Rick Kearns story about how, like, you know, he sort of made a show for himself in one of the San Francisco comedy competitions. He was out here. He's a Denver guy. He was around. You know, I've known him, but. So he gets an appointment for a general at CBS or something.
Okay.
But he comes down. He's got no fucking car. He's drunk. He's got to take a bus. So it was just this whole story about how he meets the brass. He has a great meeting. And then he has to go sit at the bus stop. And the guy who he had the meeting with drives by him.
Oh.
At the bus stop.
And just see. Yeah.
Hey, buddy.
Is it weird that I get a strange sense of pleasure about people that have it? They have it, and then they blow it for some weird reason, or they get in their own way. Like, I'm fascinated with stories like
fascinated
that.
Fascinated is a nice word. When you do comedy long enough, you're like, no, that didn't work out, huh?
Like, you know what? This is actually, first of all, thank you so much for having me. Secondly, this is my first time on the podcast. Second time I've been mentioned, though.
Oh, yeah?
I was mentioned during the Gallagher interview.
You were?
Yeah. At some point, it's right before...
Did I do it or he did it?
He did it. Right before he leaves.
Yeah.
You're saying that he does something about, like, well, he's making a certain kind of joke that's not good or he shouldn't make,
right,
or something like that.
Yeah.
And he yells out, I saw a midget comic last week tell a bunch of midget jokes. I should be able to. He's talking about me because I was at Crackers in Indianapolis.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And yeah, Broad me too. Ripple? Me too.
That used to be a good place.
I know. Right? And then one of the staff comes back and goes, hey, Gallagher's here. And I go, huh? They go, no, Gallagher's here. Like, oh, okay. Does he want to do time, or
did he bring his shit?
What, like, do I have to go on after the Sledge-O-Matic? Like, are we gonna have a Sledge-O-Matic followed by Dwarf Comedy Night? Like, that just seems pretty great.
Is he gonna take the hammer to the dwarf?
Yeah. What, right. Does he think he hits me and I explode into confetti? What happens here? And they go and they talk to him. And he goes, no, he's just here to see the show.
Weird.
And I'm like, what? And I'm a pretty new comic. I've just been headlining a few years at that point.
Yeah.
So I'm on stage, and he's like second row.
Oh, so you can see him.
I'm seeing Gallagher.
That's the worst.
While on
and
stage,
I bet you he wasn't laughing, right? Just looking at you.
No. and then I talked to him afterward. He's like, yeah, my wife loves your the date that he was with.
Okay.
Wife or something.
Yeah.
She was the fan.
Oh, okay.
So she brought him. And then I started thinking to myself, oh, God. Like, because imagine you're in that situation where your partner goes like, hey, we're going to go see a comic.
Right.
And you have to sit there in the audience and watch another comic kill.
And you know, like, the last thing you would do is sit close, though, especially if you're a known guy.
You're Gallagher, for God's sake.
You don't want to do that to the guy.
Yeah.
You know it's going to fuck him up.
Yeah. I don't want, and, like, I can never do that because look at me. I kind of stand out in a crowd. You don't just scan.
In your way.
Yeah, you don't just scan the audience and go, yeah, that's normal. Like,
yeah, that's true, yeah. But he was, I don't know, I haven't really rethunk that episode. I don't think I have any regrets about it. I was trying to make a point.
Right.
But yeah, it's the worst when there are other comics. But Broad Ripple, man, I'm in this weird zone because of the quarantine where I'm like getting, not nostalgic, but I'm thinking like, how did I fucking get here? What have I been through? I'm going to go, I actually have all of my date books going back to the 80s. Up there in the attic and here.
Yeah.
And I just want to go through and see if I can remember the rooms of all those one-nighters and weird shit that we did or that I had to do.
Man, well, I could, you probably haven't been there for a while. I'm still doing them, so I could tell you.
Crackers was an okay room. All I remember about Crackers was the woman who ran its father drove you to radio.
Yes.
And I don't know if he, I think he's passed.
I think so.
But you know, he had this weird posture. He had some sort of scoliosis or something.
Yeah.
And he was just a weird little old man. He'd come pick you up at 6 in the morning to do Bob and Tom.
Yeah. Yeah. And
it just Tom now? Just Tom and
it's Chick. Tom. It's Tom, but they don't take Bob off the marquee.
Really?
They still say it's the Bob and Tom show.
So that's the deal Bob made, so he still gets a few bucks on the back end?
Something like that. I don't know. Maybe they thought the listeners would change the channel if it was just the Tom show.
But it's just weird. I have these moments where I have these memories where I would go out back and smoke with fucking Bob.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because like he's smoking those cigarettes all the fucking time.
Yeah.
So that goes back over 10 years since I smoked a cigarette, but just like going out in that cold air in fucking Indiana and fucking smoking cigarettes with Bob. I think I remember doing that show before they moved to the fancy studio.
Oh, because I've only done it in the fancy studio.
Yeah, the one that they built for them out in the middle of a cornfield.
Yeah, that's about 5 minutes away from Tom's house.
Like, no shit.
Yeah.
Tom's compound with the 9 kids, 4 ex-wives or whatever.
You know what?
I don't know. You're still working. I'm sorry.
I'm still working. I got to go back to these shows, Mark.
I don't mind that guy.
I've got the Netflix half hour, Mark.
Yeah.
Half hour. I don't have the hour yet. I can't burn all the bridges.
Can't fuck with Tom. I don't have any problem with him. He's a good radio guy, and I appreciate radio guys.
I briefly did radio.
Me too.
Very.
I did
very
radio
briefly.
For a year and a half. I fucking loved it.
Yeah.
Were you the funny guy? The funny.
I tried to be.
Now what? Can we say dwarf?
Sure.
Dwarf is okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the bad one?
Midget's the bad one. That's the one where they protest you. I've been protested by midgets. It was not fun.
It's a weird anger, I would imagine, that comes from a bunch of little people. Little people's good, right?
Yeah, little person or person of short stature is the ultra safe
short stature
PC. Yeah.
Man, I still tell that story when we were doing, you and I were doing that live O&A.
Oh,
and
that was so good.
Dude, with that
was so good.
That beat he had when you told the story that you might be telling me now.
Yeah.
Where he goes, that you were an Uncle Tom Thumb. Come on. That was the best fucking.
That's one of the best one-liners I've ever heard.
So quick.
Uncle Tom Thumb.
That was crazy.
So good. It's also one of those things where as a dwarf comic, when you hear another dwarf joke that I haven't written yet, I'm like, damn it. How did I miss that one?
Uncle Tom Thumb. But what was it? What was the protest about?
Yeah. Oh, because you talk about shithole comedy clubs. I can talk about this one because it went out of business and I don't have to worry about.
Which one?
Joey's Comedy Club in Livonia, Michigan.
Never did it.
Okay. Good on you, sir.
Yeah.
It gets passed around the local LPA, which stands for Little People of America. It gets passed around that I'm performing there and that I say the word midget during my act, which I do, because personally, I don't see anything wrong with, like, I've talked about it, but, like, I don't mind the word. I don't want a word to have power over me. I don't want, like, if you call me a midget, now it's like, oh, God, that's that word. Now I have to fight you, you know.
Right.
Or,
it's a weird thing, like, even with, like, the word Jew for me, like, I'll use it in kind of a negative way. Like, I'm Jew. You know, it is a way to say it. But I can only take it from even people I know really well. I'm kind of sensitive to how they say Jew. So I imagine that friends of yours can say, I imagine if Adam said midget, maybe you'd be all right.
Yeah, fine. Yeah, that's great. I don't care.
It's not loaded.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right, and to me, it's all about context because I've literally been in Odessa, Texas. I was chased by some guys in a pickup truck.
Come on.
Who were yelling out, like, kill the dwarf.
Why?
And when, that's the more PC term, but I think kill is the part that bothers me.
What did you do to make them upset?
I kicked them out of the show. They had this 2-for-1 beer thing. I don't know.
So you had them kicked out?
Yeah, and then they waited, and then
waited to kill the dwarf?
Yeah. Which sounds like one of those old games that we can't play anymore because it's not PC. Like, we used to be able to play Smear the Queer. Now we can't play Smear the Queer anymore because that's non-PC. We used to be able to play Kill the Dwarf. So, but like, when we walk out to go to our cars after the show and the guy yells, "Kill the Dwarf!" I'm not stopping, like, "Thank you for using the proper nomenclature."
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not doing that. So, yeah. Livonia, Michigan. They find out that I'm performing. They know that I say the word midget. So they a group of them. I'll tell the real story, not the joke story.
All right.
The group of them show up and they're outside of the comedy club and they have picket signs.
Dwarves.
Yeah, dwarves. I mean the
little people.
Yeah, the joke is like, yeah, they weren't picket signs. They're 3x5 cards. But like, you know, they're out there and they're protesting the show. They're saying don't go see this show because
which to people walking in must have been just the best.
They thought if you're walking
I'm sorry.
And you're seeing a dwarf comic and there's dwarves protesting, you're like, this is some meta shit. Like, this is some
how
good...
many were protesting?
I'm
sorry. It's just sad that there's no way like dwarves doing anything isn't going to be a little funny.
And that's my point. It's funny. Yes, I'm sad that I've said something or that they think I say something that makes them upset. Sure, that I don't want to make anyone upset. I want to make people laugh. That's my goal. But the fact that you're like 10 to 15 little people out there, it's funny, okay?
Yeah.
It's funny.
It's
so
rough.
Then
I know it's a deep one because I think we don't see that many little people. You just don't.
No.
And when you do, it's like, you know, it's like a unicorn.
Oh, yeah. Even I freak out about it. If I see another dwarf, first of all, now, especially if, like, I see another dwarf in a restaurant or something,
yeah,
then I feel insane pressure because now everyone's looking at two dwarves in the restaurant. They're like, is this a blind date? And they're looking for each other. Is it like depending on the sex and the age? They're like, is this a father son? Are they lost? Are they brothers? Like,
how is this possible that there's two in one room?
Oh my God, we had three dwarves at my high school.
Really?
Yeah, me and then a brother sister, and that freaked people out. That freaked people out that there was three. The brother was older. And then when the sister got there, everyone went up to the brother like, hey, there's another dwarf. You should go try to. And he's like, my sister.
Right.
That's my sister. Can't. No. What? You asshole.
But the weird thing is, it's like, I would never, like, I understand racism.
Sure.
I understand sexism.
Mm-hmm.
I understand anti-Semitism. I understand all the bad isms.
Yeah.
But, like, nobody hates a dwarf. So, like, I can understand that.
That's going to be the name of my next special. Nobody hates a dwarf. Come on.
But, you know, it's like it's more of a fascination. There's like an endearing. Like, I think the diminishing quality is that, like, it's so cute.
Yes. And
referred to as it.
Yeah.
Would be a problem. Look at it.
Yeah. One of the things about what I've noticed and why it's sort of not okay to make fun of dwarves, but no one really gets mad at you that much. Like, it's one of the last groups that it's kind of safe to make jokes about, is that we're not a threat. Like, if you make, like, if there's a group of four people of a certain race in a crowd and you make the wrong joke, there is the fear of, like, oh, they could hurt me. Four dwarves in the audience.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
Try it.
Yeah, I don't fight. We're not.
Yeah, but also, I guess just the idea that, like, people are touching you and picking you up and stuff. Does that happen?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Mark. Okay, so this is a joke, but serious, okay?
Yeah.
So at the end of my shows, in the before time, I do the meet and greets. I go outside. I hawk my T-shirts and my DVDs to try to make a couple extra bucks. And I have to say at the end of my show, okay, I'm going to be out there. I have a rule: you cannot pick me up. And you're laughing, and I get it. But like, there, whenever I do it, there's always a, oh. Like, audibly, you can hear this noise in the crowd. I thought we could pick him up.
Damn.
Like, it's like, no, I'm a human being. I'm a 36-year-old man. I'm a father. You know, you don't just get to, like, I had a horrible back injury because I did a show one time, and so this woman comes up to me and they want to take a photo afterward, and she goes, I want a really funny photo, a fun photo. And I'm looking at the girl, and she's like, she's a buck 15,
yeah,
soaking wet, really tiny girl.
Yeah.
So I go, okay, and I kind of grab her and put her in a fireman's carry, yeah, where she's just over my shoulders and,
right,
I'm holding her up. Great photo.
Yeah.
Her boyfriend, much larger, yeah, goes, oh, I want that photo. Jumps on me.
Come on.
Just jumps on my back. I was out, Mark, for like a year and a half just doing physical therapy and like,
really?
Yeah. Like, I would go on the road and I would just do stretches in the hotel room. And like,
was it something that happened because of the way you're built?
I have no idea.
Backs are so fucked up.
Yeah.
So when did you know that you were...
when I was a dwarf? Pretty early. I didn't, you know, that's the, okay. I have to tell this.
Yeah.
I have to tell this COVID joke.
Yeah.
And because it's a real story.
Okay.
I was at a grocery store.
Yeah.
And a kid in a grocery store looked at me and just yelled out, look what it did to him!
A kid. He just put that together.
Yeah.
He decided.
He thought that I was walking around pre-COVID, like 6'2", loving life.
That's hilarious.
Someone coughed on me and then like that happened.
God bless the children.
Oh, they are so honest.
But was it one of those things where you weren't growing and you didn't know? And there must have been a window there where you were like, you know, did you have to be told by your folks?
Yeah. So my parents, not dwarves, just throwing that out there. Like, we don't
How
have.
How does that happen then?
I know. you're asking me? I don't know.
It's genetic, isn't it?
Yes. It's a recessive gene from what I know. And my parents are not dwarves. You know,
yeah,
we don't all have to come from the same tribe.
Right.
And so when I was born, my dad, very early, he knew that I would be made fun of. He knew,
yeah,
the world is a very cruel place.
Right.
So his philosophy was, I'm going to make fun of my son first, but in a supportive way.
Yeah.
Like, he would crack on me when I was like 3-4 years old, and then he would say, okay, now hit me back with something. Like, he taught me how to bust balls.
Right.
So then, by the time I got to school and kids made fun of me, I had comebacks, like,
oh, good,
written.
So
ready.
So you were forced to be reckoned with.
Yeah.
You got the respect.
Yeah. So that, and I think my dad had a really good, positive way of looking at it, of he didn't try to ignore it and pretend it didn't exist. I was always raised with, yes, you are a little person. You are different. Life is not going to be the same for you.
Right.
But
yeah,
you can still lead a very good life. My dad was the one who told me that when I meet someone, start with a dwarf joke, like,
right,
try to slip in a dwarf joke really, yeah, fast. That way they're comfortable.
Like, lighten the tension.
Yeah,
break the tension.
Yeah, because then, yeah, the person's just staring at me like,
do I say anything? Why
does he know?
I tell you, the little people I've met, and there's not a ton of them, all, mm-hmm, seem pretty well adjusted. I don't know why,
yeah,
but I guess, but they are. I mean, I guess there's an acceptance that you have to live with,
yeah,
you know, from very early on, that most people don't have to kind of reckon with.
Yeah, well, and the thing is kind of like I hinted at it before, that I never was anything else. I don't know what the average size
There's
life
no fixing
is.
It.
Yeah. Well, I mean, now there might be.
Really?
Yeah, there's a new experimental treatment that you can give to children between the ages of 3 and 10.
Really?
Yeah.
That already have the dwarfism?
Yeah, they have dwarfism. It's an injection, and it doesn't cure, like, I'm not sure the full effects of this, so I don't want to say it wrong, but some of the health problems associated with dwarfism, it lessens that. It's still in phase 3 of testing, but it's interesting.
Yeah. What are health problems?
Back problems.
Right.
We have some neck problems, respiratory problems.
Really? COVID's scary.
Yeah, right? Hearing problems sometimes. But yeah, there's more than just your small. And that's just my type of dwarfism. There's over 100 different types of dwarfism.
100 different types?
Yeah, well, it's a genetic
mutation. Is there condescension within the community of what type of dwarf you are?
Of course. Of course there is.
Oh, no.
That's why when they talk about how, like, we need to end people judging people by being different, it's like, yeah that'd be nice.
Yeah.
But, like, within, like, you know, like, there's sects of the same religion that fight with each other because they believe slightly different things.
Sure.
Yes, some dwarves don't like other dwarves, or they make fun of other dwarves because they're
the only types of dwarves.
Yeah, because they're the only ones that we can make fun of. You know,
have you now? This is a dumb thing, but is there some place that you all congregate?
Depends on what country. There's rumors. Every city I go to, someone always tells me.
I guess it's a sort of, is there a support situation?
Yes. Yes. Right. There is LPA, the same group that got together to protest me, is actually a really good group. I don't besmirch them at all. They're doing amazing things. LPA, Little People of America.
Yeah.
They have a national convention every summer. I used to go to them when I was a kid.
You did?
Yeah, over 1,000 dwarves in one hotel.
Wow.
Yeah, which I always make the joke of, like, that's got to be really weird for the person that's just staying there on the business trip. they just walk in. It's like, okay. what happened?
Man, I drank too much. Woke up in the Wizard of Oz.
Right. Yeah. I think there's an old Geraldo joke that's something like that, probably, because he was fucking brilliant. But
Craigie.
Yeah, so there's that support system, and they do a lot of things. Like, they get doctors together that that specialize in dwarfism. They do a lot of social stuff. They do sporting events, which, once again, is so great that they do. Very funny. Really funny.
Yeah, and there can't be anything wrong with the laughter that comes from that.
Come on. I've been to dwarf track meets, Mark.
Yeah,
hilarious.
But it's just the heartbreaking earnestness of it.
Yeah,
that you know, that's what makes the laughter a little dubious. Is that what you're laughing at? Is these people trying?
Yeah,
and that's sort of a little cold, but it's human. It's like
it's
sympathetic.
Come on, it's like. No one, at least no person of sane nature, is saying that these people are less than or they deserve less or anything like that. It's just like, okay, but there's funny things to be had. Like, yes, there are basketball games, but none of us know how to rebound because we've never had to rebound before. We've never gotten a rebound. So the ball misses and we just all stand there with our arms out like a basket, just going like, all right, I just wait. And the ball comes down, right? Like, we're not skying over anybody else grabbing the ball at its highest point.
What's that other guy's name, the guy who hangs around the Comedy Store?
Oh, Nick Nowicki.
Yeah, how's he doing?
He's great. It's funny because I met Nick years ago.
You guys got the same dwarfism?
I think
he's a little different.
Because I have achondroplasia. That's the most common type. If you've seen a dwarf on television, like, it's the same kind of type that Peter Dinklage has.
For sure, right. Yeah, Peter Dinklage.
He's got achondroplasia.
But not the kind, the guy from the Mini-Me.
Yeah, Vern. Vern Troyer.
He's dead, right?
Yeah, he's passed. But yeah, he had a different type of dwarfism. I'm not quite sure what it is.
So when you're going to high school and you're doing things, I mean, what are you moving towards? What's your interests?
Oh,
like, how does that work? Were you a nerd, or were you like...
I was a drama nerd. I was big into theater.
Were you?
And comedy sports, which is
improv
comedy.
Stuff?
Yeah.
In high school?
Yeah. Loved it.
Really?
And wrestling. I was really into wrestling. Was on the wrestling team. And I'll tell you one thing, Mark.
Yeah.
I've gotten a few really good reactions on stage, a few good laughs.
Right.
Nothing will ever compare to the look on a father's face when his son just got pinned by a dwarf. Nothing. Nothing beats that. Just the disappointment. Just the, oh God.
You've given that kid something he's got to live with.
Yeah.
For the rest of his life.
Yeah.
You got pinned by a dwarf.
How's that car ride on the way home?
Oh,
hey,
man.
Dad, you proud of me?
How's that life? How's that knowing that?
That's something that dad probably like yells out.
I can
like
see that though,
the kid's whole life.
I mean, you've got to be, because they can't, you know, maneuver on the same level as you.
Yeah, low center of gravity. There's a lot of dwarves that actually go into wrestling for that reason, and I'm talking about amateur wrestling, not WWE, AEW type stuff. But yeah, some dwarves do that too. But yeah, so I did wrestling in high school, but mostly theater, and loved it. It was great. I had a great teacher that her name is Mary Krell Oishi, and the freshman year I tried to audition for the school play, and I auditioned for the kid because I thought, dwarf kid,
right?
And she pulled me aside and went, what the fuck are you doing? Why are you going for the kid? And I was like, well, because I'm small, so yeah. Kid, that makes sense. Yeah. She goes,
kid
no.
sized.
Yeah, she goes, no, go for the lead. She's like, I'm gonna cast based on talent, not based on, you know, size and physical appearance.
Right.
And I didn't get the lead, but I didn't get the kid, so I was stoked about it.
No, and it's a nice boost to normalizing your fucking personhood.
Yeah, and sometimes you need that. Like it was great to have a person look at me and then say, no, I'm not gonna judge you like that.
Well, I think that's the essence of why it's problematic, the laughter at little mm-hmm. people trying to do things and everything else, is that, you know, you're grown-ups.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're people that, you know, have lives and work. It's like people, it's literally an objectification thing.
Yeah.
It's just not, it's not necessarily sexual. It's just sort of, look at the toy person.
Oh, it can be sexual,
yeah?
Mark.
Really?
Oh, there's certain people that are banned from going to the LPA conventions because they have fetishes.
Really?
Yeah.
Like little people?
No, like tall people. That they come? Yeah, they come to try to come.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they come to try to pick up on the little people, and it's like, ooh.
That's
which I, like, listen, I've... In my single days, sure, I had some fun with women that had a curiosity. Okay,
yeah,
and to me, people would be like, "Oh, they're objectifying you." I'd be like, "I had an orgasm. How is that objectifying me?"
I think that's different. How do you know? Yeah, I mean, you know, fetish is fetish, sure, but it's like some people like Jews, some people like black dudes,
yeah,
some people like people with one hand.
Yeah,
you know? I mean, it's not.
I mean, if you go on Pornhub, there's some people that like some really weird shit.
Yeah, I try to stay out of there. There's a few things I don't need to know. But so when you get out of high school, did you go to college? Did you have a trajectory you were going for?
I went to USC.
Down here?
Yeah.
Where'd you grow up?
Orange County.
Oh, so it's not far.
No, not far at all. And I was going...
There's a lot of lunatics up there.
Yeah. A lot.
A certain type.
Certain type.
Rich lunatics.
Mm-hmm. Huh. I'm related to some of them.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. And good friends with others. I remember my mom would tell me stories that, like, when they brought me home from the hospital, she had some friends that would go up to her and be like, don't worry, he'll probably grow out of it.
Yeah, he'll stretch out. Yeah.
she kept going, dwarfism, I don't think you understand.
Do you have siblings?
Yes, I have a sister. She's tall. She's an accountant. She's really good.
Yeah.
And she's got a husband, and they got two kids. Like, we're the Beaver Cleaver family. Like,
sure.
Mom, dad, their mom and dad are still together. Sister, brother. I'm the weird thing.
Yeah, but you're not really weird. You're just different size and shape.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And yeah. So grew up in Orange County. Worked at Disneyland. I was not one of the seven, Mark.
All right.
No.
Okay.
I was not in the suit.
Yeah. Is that a dwarf job? To play the dwarfs? Not usually, because they're kind of big, right?
Yeah. They're larger, but there were some little people that played, I mean, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, it breaks the magic, but there were some little people that played Mickey and Minnie.
Oh, really?
They're usually smaller.
Are there little people jobs?
I don't know. I haven't really
done them. You're a comic, you know, I know, but yeah. Like, I imagine, I was wondering if there are jobs that require...
I know that in World War II, to save space and resources, dwarves were recruited in the Air Force to be gunners.
Really?
There would be a bubble below the plane.
Right.
And then the dwarf was put in the bubble.
The worst place.
Yeah. Because we fit and it saved money on materials or whatever.
No kidding.
So, yeah, I know that that would be a dwarf job.
Yeah. Not a great job. So, all right, so you were working at Disneyland in what capacity?
I was a bodyguard for the characters.
Really?
Yeah, so I walk around with the characters and, you know, I form lines and stuff. And every now and then a 5-year-old steps out of line, I got to be like, what's up, bitch?
Yeah.
Throw a little forearm
shiver.
What
are you thinking?
Yeah, totally. Doing that and then go off to USC. I was trying to be a sports broadcaster.
Really?
I wanted to do that.
Are you a sports freak?
Yeah. Love it.
What are the ones? Any of them? Are you one of those people that just watches any sport and you're like in?
Not to say I was watching Korean soccer when all of our sports were shut down, but I may have been watching Korean soccer when all of our sports were
shut down. You just like it.
I just like sports.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just
you could have been a sports. You still can.
I mean, you never know.
Yeah,
I could certainly do it. I'm friends with some people that do it, so they might be able to hook me up. But yeah, going to USC to do that, and then at 19, stumbled into a comedy club and life changed.
Yeah, what happened?
I took my dad to the Brea Improv, and the comedian on stage was making dwarf jokes without knowing that I was there.
Who's that?
Mencia.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. I forget. You're kind of like you and Bobby Lee or Mencia.
Yeah.
Prodigies.
Yes. We came from that coaching tree.
Right.
So yeah, he was on stage and half the audience is laughing and the audience that's sitting by me is like not laughing at all.
Right.
And Mencia like looks over and goes, "Why aren't you guys laughing?" He goes, "What? Is one of them here?"
One of them.
And I just raised my hand in the air like, "Yeah."
Yeah.
And he called me up on stage. He's like, "I want to talk to you." So he calls me up on stage.
You caught him. That's such a fucking, that is so funny because that's the only thing that an asshole can do diplomatically to make him not look like a dick. It's like he got caught red-handed being a dick, and now he's got to erase it by being magnanimous.
To be fair, I really enjoyed the jokes.
No, right. But I'm saying that like you know when you're in that moment you're like oh yeah. Fuck and you got to be like so what's going on man
yeah
you know.
So he brought me up on stage and he started asking me questions and I answered the questions earnestly. I answered them honestly and my answers got laughs.
Right.
Like he said, like, "Where do you work?" And I go, "I work at Disneyland." And the audience laughed and I went, you know, I turned to them and had a retort of some kind.
Yeah.
And just that was the shot that we're out where I was like, oh man, this feels really good.
Yeah.
Like, cause it's a whole different type of thing when you're the person that everyone likes to laugh at. And now you're making the jokes and making them laugh. So you're controlling the message.
Right. I think Harry Shearer said it to me that it's you control the reason why people are laughing at you.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's pretty great.
Yeah.
And so I told Mencia that night, I go, I'm gonna be a comedian. This is awesome.
Yeah.
And he goes, okay.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah.
So I started doing it.
Open mics?
Yeah.
Where at?
First open mic night was at the Laugh Factory.
Uh-huh.
And a few open mics in. Two open mic stories. I remember the first time I got there.
How long ago was this?
This was 17 years ago.
You've been doing it that long?
Yeah, I know. I look fantastic.
You're an old timer, man.
It's weird when you cross that point and you pause and go, oh, I'm not the kid anymore.
Yeah.
Now I'm the guy
the
that's
veteran.
Been, yeah, I'm the guy that's been doing it. I remember going to the Laugh Factory, and it's my first time. And some guy's there going like, hey, so you're how many times you been doing? How many times you? And then he goes to me and I go, it's my first time. He goes, well, don't worry. I've been doing this open mic for 12 years. Do what I do. You'll be fine. I'll go, I don't want to do what you do.
I don't
want to be here in 12 years. I'll do the opposite of what you do.
Is that dude still there?
Probably.
Yeah.
And then I remember like my third or fourth open mic at the Laugh Factory, Jamie called me up to his office. Jamie, who owns the Laugh Factory.
Jamie Masada, yeah.
Jamie Masada, and he goes, buddy, here's what we do, buddy. We have little people comedy night, buddy. All little people comic.
Yeah.
All little people in audience, buddy.
Really? Now, how many are there of you guys? I only know
Not enough to fill an audience.
And also, but I know that woman, the who's that woman? She has a different type of dwarfism.
Oh, Tanya Lee Davis?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's awesome. Yeah. I love her. Every time I think I'm the first dwarf to do something in comedy,
yeah, she did it.
Tanya Lee did it first. I thought I was the first guy, the first dwarf to have his name on the Comedy Store. Nope. Tanya Lee Davis, yeah. Right there. It's actually on there twice.
Oh, really?
I don't know if that's like, I don't know why, but she's on there twice. It's crazy. So she's awesome.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I started doing open mics. Fast forward to about a year and a half in, I go back to see another Mencia show. He sees me before the show and goes, oh, you're that guy.
Yeah.
And did you ever start doing stand-up? I go, yeah, I've been doing it for about a year and a half. And he goes, why don't you open my show tonight? And I'm like, oh, shit, okay. I've just been doing coffee shops. And
were you doing like a guest spot? Or
yeah,
like, okay.
Guest spot.
10 minutes?
Three.
Oh, yeah.
3 to 5.
Right.
So I go on stage. I do my guest spot. I come off stage. Mencia goes on stage.
Yeah.
And says, he wasn't even supposed to go on it at that point. And he just ran up on stage and goes, hey,
yeah,
did you guys like Brad? And the audience really cheered. And
yeah.
And he goes, cool. You've made a very important decision for me. I've been looking for like a new opener. My current opener is ready to start headlining and going off and doing
his
own
thing.
Who was that? Steve Trevino.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, he's ready. He's good. He looks at me and just goes, Brad, you want to be my new opener? Like from the stage.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes. And the next weekend, he's doing the Fox Theater in Bakersfield, and it's 1,400 people. And I've gone from coffee shops to doing that.
Really?
Yeah.
And you toured with Carlos.
Yeah, for like 4 years.
Man, so you kind of skipped a big step.
Huge. No, I'm fully aware of that does not happen in comedy.
Huh.
I'm fully aware of that.
In retrospect, was it mm-hmm. beneficial, or do you think you would have liked to have come up through the ranks in the clubs and built a following that way?
I see the pros and cons in both.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was great to have real audiences and being able to, because a lot of times when you start off, it's just other comics
yeah.
that are in the audience. So it's tough to really gauge if your joke is really good or not, because are they laughing, or are they laughing because you're bombing? Are they, you know, do they think if they laugh, you're going to get the spot and they're not?
Mm.
But so in that way, it was very beneficial. But I immediately went on the road, got good. So I didn't really develop those friendships and that camaraderie around the LA scene.
Right. And then when his shit hit the fan, you got lumped in.
Some of it, yeah. Some of it, yeah.
Was he active in mentoring you?
Yeah.
Like how?
Like I would do a set and then we would talk about the set and why it was good, why it was bad, where I could have done wrong.
And it was almost impossible better. For him to steal your
it'd be really hard. It'd be really difficult to go on stage.
You're like the only opener he wasn't really able.
Yeah, it's like it'd be really hard to go on after the dwarf and be like, it's tough being a midget. Like it'd be kind of a. But yeah,
it's the big midget tour.
One thing that taught me that whole experience taught me is
with
that,
him or him stealing.
Let's just say. Opening for him
yeah.
and being associated with him
right.
is that shades of gray. Mm. I think a lot of people look at certain people or events and things and they want one clear answer. This person is good. This person is bad.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that's the problem.
And they're shades of gray.
Black and white thinking.
Yeah. Because that guy took me on the road. He would pay for my travel. He'd pay for my food. When we went shopping, he'd say, throw whatever you want on my pile.
Yeah.
I gotcha. That guy was insanely generous to me.
Straight up with you.
Yeah.
No, I mean, also industrious, knows that, you know, was working all kinds of angles, had a lot of ideas. You mm-hmm. know, I get it.
Put me on his TV show.
Right. What were some of the things you learned from him? Because I can see him and Bobby.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, because Bobby does his delivery.
Mm.
You know, that kind of weird momentum that you get, you know, and it works, you know, it's not stealing. It's just, I can see where Bobby learned these performative tricks.
Yeah. One thing that I specifically remember learning from him is how to play a really large room.
Oh, they slow it down?
Yeah. And how you can, how you have to mime everything bigger if you're playing like a large theater,
right?
Or like a sold out room,
or if you're pretending to be Mexican, you have to you gotta make it.
I did learn that. I know a lot about Mexican food. I can do that really well. But yeah, so yeah, it's shades of gray. I think a lot of people, like I said, want a person to be all good, all bad, all whatever. And I would say, think about the people in your lives. Like, you can say,
yeah,
the flaws.
Yeah, I get that. You know,
it's
really hard as somebody in the community. And I didn't know, like, I had to do two interviews with him because I didn't know exactly what, you know, what had gone down. But like, just like to be so shunned by your community.
Yeah.
You know, for that, something that specific. I mean, there's been plenty of fucking joke stealing freaks in this world, you know, and there's been all kinds of weirdos that get absorbed by comedy because we're weirdos. But
yeah,
but man, to be spit out like that with that much aggression and then have to try to figure out how to rebuild for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
you know, I understand he fucked up, but I also felt bad.
Yeah. And it's a weird thing because now, like, I'm friends with Joe. Like,
right.
Like, I'm
with Rogan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm friends with Rogan. I'm friends with that crew. I'm still friends with Mencia.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a weird place to be in where it's like, I understand both sides and I've seen both sides. So it's very strange to be.
I think,
kind of
like, looking
like
back on it, like, more of it, so I think a lot more of it was about those two guys than about anything else.
That would make a lot of sense. That would make a lot of sense.
You know, it's like, I mean, I get it, but like, there's fucking been joke thieves and freaks. Yeah, I mean, I get all of that.
Yeah.
But it just seems like so much of it was fueled by this fucking cockfight that, you know, and territorialism.
Mm-hmm. I'm laughing because when you say there's so many joke thieves, I'm remembering a story where a dwarf comic came up to me before one of my shows.
Yeah.
And said, like, hey, it was at Pepper Bear.
Are you going to be doing the midget bit? Because I kind of do the
Pepper Bellies in Fairfield, California. Guy goes up and does pretty much a lot of my first album.
Really?
And then comes off stage, and I'm like, and I'm just kind of staring at him. And there's dwarf jokes, and then there's like, no, that was the dwarf joke that I wrote. Like,
right,
that. Like,
right, right.
It's not just the perspective. I've had Little People Comics open for me before, and we're fine.
Right.
Like we could talk. There's a great comic, dwarf comic in Houston, Texas, named Clinton. This is his real last name, I promise you. Clinton Shorter.
Perfect.
God's funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like he's opened for me twice, and we don't have to worry about it. But yeah, there was one comic that opened for me that did my act.
And what'd you do?
I just kind of looked at him and said, oh, you said you were a big fan? He goes, yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty obvious.
Right.
And he didn't get it. He didn't understand that he literally just did my act.
Did he know he did it?
I don't think he did.
Huh.
It's weird.
I mean, it's got to be like, you know, on some level, sadly, in this particular situation, it probably got to be pretty empowering for that guy. Like in the sense that, like, you know, I don't know if he's, no, in a weird way, like, I don't know if he's going to make a big success with your act. But I mean, to be able to have the feelings that you had.
Yeah.
Around your issues,
yeah,
to actually have control over why people laugh at you as a little person,
sure,
must have been pretty addicting.
No, and I get it, and because I had the same run. But then for every story like that,
what'd you do to him though?
Just
tell him.
I just told
him
like, yeah, dude, that's my set, so change it up. I understand we're gonna have similar perspectives, but find some different punchlines, and I can't have you opening for me if you're doing
your
the first album.
Yeah.
But then there's another story. This last Montreal Comedy Festival that I went to.
Yeah.
There's a dwarf comic up there who came up to me and told me that he had started doing stand up when he heard my albums, and then this is the first time he had gotten into the Montreal Comedy Festival, so he was walking up to thank me. And I was like, oh, wow, that's cool. Like,
yeah, man.
And that's a trip that, like, that it could
be an inspiration.
Yeah. It's a weird thing because we're just doing this to have fun and make people laugh, maybe make people think and that. But then when you have side effects like that, it really kind of takes you back for a second.
Yeah, it's great. You don't realize you have that impact because we're selfish animals. And when it turns out we did something nice just by coincidence.
It's like when people ask us to do charity shows and we do, and people go, oh man, thank you so much for doing this for the charity. And you're like, I still got up here and told my jokes, and I got my rush from it. Like,
Right. I wanted stage time. But, what was the charity? How many times did you see comics go up for these shows, these benefits at the Comedy Store? What's this for again? I'm glad to be doing a good thing, but I got to work out my 10 minutes.
Yeah, that I have to know if I have a joke about the thing that I'm we're raising money for.
So you got how many kids?
One. Brand new spanking baby.
Really?
10 month old. Yeah. It had a baby during quarantine.
Before?
Her and I actually have the same birthday, January 13th.
You and the baby?
Yeah.
Huh.
She was born on my birthday.
That's great.
Great is that?
And now when your wife physically is normal.
She's taller. She's 5'7".
And now genetically, were there concerns, or is that not a possibility really?
Oh no, it's a possibility. There's a 50-50 chance.
Really? Once it's no longer a recessive gene?
Mm-hmm. Well, once I'm sure people will tweet at me the exact odds if they're like geneticists and Grendel squares and something like that. Yeah. But we were told 50-50 chance. Uh-huh. And she is a little person.
She is?
Yeah, she is. I love it.
No kidding.
Yeah. My wife is Chinese. I'm a dwarf. We have an Asian dwarf baby. And if you want to know what that is, it's the cutest fucking thing in the world. It's awesome.
Huh.
Yeah. And you know what? When we found out, because they can actually do tests and find out before she's born.
Yeah.
They do ultrasounds and they can measure the limbs and go like, oh yeah, you're in the whatever percentile. And then the head's very large.
Right.
So they go like, yep, head's big, small arms, small legs. She's a little person. And I actually had a really hard time with that at first.
Why?
Because I knew it came from me.
Uh-huh.
Where if she doesn't like being a dwarf, if she has problems being a dwarf, I can't be like, well,
I don't know how it happened.
Maybe you got it from your mom. I don't know what she was doing before me. I can't say that.
Yeah.
So, but then a friend of mine named Jensen Karp told me like, no, this is the absolute best situation. Who better to raise this child?
Right.
Than you.
Yeah.
Because you've been through it. You know the things. Mm. So, this kid has the best dad in the world for the life that she's going to live.
Well, that's a curious thing. Is that do you see it as a handicap? I mean, how is it classified? Is it different for everybody?
I mean, it is a handicap. It's classified as
it
that.
Is. It
so,
is.
But it's weird because I've had a pretty good run in terms of my health. I haven't had a lot of complications, or I had one surgery when I was in high school, but that was it.
Uh-huh.
Just on my ankle. And but I've had a great run. I've had friends that have had multiple surgeries. I have one friend who,
just because of the way the body is.
Yeah, it's the way the body structure. I have one friend, him and his wife are both dwarves, and here's the thing. If both parents pass on the dwarf gene.
Yeah.
Then the kid is something called a double dwarf dominant, which sounds awesome, but is not.
Right.
The kid will usually not live.
Mm.
And they usually have to take bad stuff.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine, that's happened to him twice, him
terrible.
And his wife, and it's awful. It's awful. So the fact, yes, it is a disability, and there's some dwarves that have different types of dwarfism than me that have a much harder go of it.
Right.
And and my heart goes out to them and to see what they do and how they deal with it. Like, it's weird that I could look at my situation and be like, wow, I've had some things not go the way I exactly wanted them to, but at the same time, I'm pretty lucky. My daughter has achondroplasia, same type of dwarfism as me. And so far, so good. She's been great. We've seen geneticists, we've seen orthopedists, we've seen everyone kind of looking at her, and so far so good, fingers crossed. But It's great. She
the beginning of the journey.
She talked. She said her first word.
She did? How old is she?
10 months.
Yeah, is that normal? That seems...
I have no idea.
What was the word?
Data.
Oh, that's nice.
Said it while staring at me. That's good.
That's good.
And then she's trying to say mom, but she can't. She's having trouble with the M, so she calls my wife Bob.
Uh-huh.
Like
Bob,
like she's trying to say, but her M sound like B. So,
right, right.
So we go into her room in the morning, and she's like, "Dada, Bob." It's just kind of like, "All right, yeah." So I'm raising our daughter with my partner Bob.
Yeah.
And
that's funny because she's trying to say mom. She's close.
Yeah, she's getting there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a trip, man. She was born before everything shut down, but then everything shut down, and it's tough because we don't have people coming over, you know, like we don't have
grandparents.
Like we
both
have,
your folks still alive?
Yeah, they're and they've seen her and they've held her, like, you know, outside wearing masks,
right.
and stuff. Like that. But
oh, that's good.
Yeah, mom can't come over and like do the things that she and help us out.
Give
us a break.
Yeah,
so yeah, it's been rough, but I mean. I know what people say when they say it's like the greatest thing in the world. It absolutely is. It's also the hardest thing.
That's what it seems to me. Yeah. And what have you been doing? You and Adam still going at it or what?
Oh, doing the podcast. And you're talking about Adam Ray. We're not doing the podcast anymore. He is. We didn't have a Van Halen moment. We didn't split up. I'm not hating him. It was just. I knew that with the kid coming that
right.
I would need more time to be a dad, and the kid's schedule doesn't care that you've got to interview Susan Sarandon.
Right.
Like, the kid needs a thing.
Sure.
Needs a thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I stepped away from the podcast. He still does it, and it's cool. We're fine. I tell this story to people. People are like, oh, so you and Adam like hate each other now? It's like, no, we're friends. That's why we started the podcast. We're friends.
Right.
So yeah, all good.
And what do you got going on? Did you a special drop or something?
I've done. I did a virtual show, like a big thing where everyone bought tickets and like.
Did that work out?
Yeah, it was more fun than I thought it was going to be.
No kidding. So you did it from your house?
Yeah, from my house. Got a couple lights, got a camera there, and just stood. And they let it's a company called Rush Ticks. They got some great shows coming up. Go. They let like 20 people in as VIPs that you could actually hear them laughing.
Uh-huh.
So you have something to go off of.
Right.
But then we had over 600 people watching the
show.
Who
was on the show?
Me.
Just you?
Just me.
So you made a few bucks then?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I did okay. It was nice.
Oh, that's wild.
It was nice. I mean, hey, man, people are getting creative in these times, you know?
Yeah, I'm wary to do. I'm glad I do the podcast. I don't really want to do outdoor shows. I just don't feel like it.
I totally understand. I mean.
And the virtual shows, I don't know. You know, it's just the weirdest thing to me is doing, like, you know, and I'm not bragging, but, you know, I had to do the Tonight Show from my backyard. Which is like, you know, who the fuck ever thought that would happen?
Yeah, yeah. And
I talked to Obama in my garage in 2016. Now I'm talking to Fallon in my backyard, and it's his show. Like, I was ahead of the curve on the fucking lo-fi business here.
A lot of stuff has been happening in this house. Yeah, it's, you know, people are adjusting. I did some drive-in shows.
How were they?
It's interesting.
How do you pace yourself?
What you do is...
Are they sitting on their cars or in their cars?
Both.
Yeah.
The front row, I did one at the Irvine Improv, and then they did it at the top of their parking structure.
Uh-huh.
And they have the front row be pickup trucks,
mm-hmm.
and the trucks turn around, and people are like tailgating. Mm. So you can actually see them and hear them laughing. So you can kind of time it out. It's not perfect. It's not a, you know, it's not a sold out show on a Saturday night, but it's something.
Yeah.
And for people like myself that don't, you know, have another source of income,
right,
besides this.
Is your wife working?
No, because she had to, you know, she stopped to take care of the kid,
right?
And then I was gonna work, but then everything shut down, so
right.
I had to pivot and do virtual shows and drive-in shows. Hell, I'm on Cameo.
Yeah. Does that make you any money?
Yeah, it did pretty well.
Huh.
People want dwarves to give them good news, you know, or wish them happy birthday. It's
is there a category? A dwarf category?
I don't know.
Are you just a popular dwarf?
Yeah, it's like me and Danny Woodburn. I think we're the only dwarves on there. I'm probably wrong. There's probably a lot more little people on there. But yeah, you just kind of adjust. And I don't know. I've said this, but I'm sure other people have made this comparison. But the virtual shows and drive-in shows, it's like the methadone. It's not.
No, I get it.
It's not the heroin, but.
Yeah, I just, like, for some reason, I'm just happy that, like, I'm not in a position where I have to do them. But, you know, I imagine if you have to, you just adjust.
Yeah, you just figure it out. It just,
none of it sounds fun to me. I took a part into something, and it doesn't sound fun to me. You know,
well,
you want it, because part of this is you kind of want it to be fun.
Yeah, to be fair, Mark, you weren't the guy that was having a ton of fun before this.
I'm not known as the fun guy. Yeah, so now it's just, like, worse. Yeah, my fun was no fun. Now it's just no fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
I know.
I mean, you know, you do what you can. And I've been out there and did a couple of shows in places where they were at like 1/3 capacity. So they were like in a comedy club.
So they're spread out.
Yeah. I did Hilarities in Cleveland and the Comedy Works in Denver. And
that's such a tiny room. How did that must have been odd.
So it's not 400 people. It's 120 people. Or
spread out through the room?
Yeah.
Wild. And it was okay?
Yeah. Oh, it's better than the virtual show because it's...
Well, no, I mean, I've done the shows for 9 people indoors in my life. I mean, I know, you know, there's some nights in the original room where I get it.
Right, and that's what, it's like I would do press for the shows or I would have comics call me up and be like, oh man, isn't it weird having the club just 1/3 full? I'm like, I only started selling tickets like a year ago. Yeah, this is not...
It's like an 11:30 spot at the original room.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
We're used to it. We're comics. So
yeah, well, yeah, I could get that. I could get around that. And they're wearing masks?
Sometimes. Yeah. It's like...
Scary, right?
Yeah, it's scary.
Callum got the shit.
Yeah.
And what's his name?
Shab.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know those guys?
I know Shab.
Did he get over it?
Yeah. I mean...
They're fine?
I don't know anyone who's passed from it, but I know some. I've got like 12 friends that have gotten it.
Really?
Yeah.
And they all made it through.
Yeah. I mean, and then I know someone whose parent passed away from it. And,
oh, yeah, me too.
But
Lori?
That's, yeah, Lori.
Yeah.
Lori Kilmartin's Twitter.
Wow.
Going through that.
Crazy.
It's impossible to like. It's such an in the moment thing that it's hard to describe to people, but go back and read some of those tweets, and it's just the most funny and heart punch gut
wrench
stuff.
She's like so equipped for it because she did that whole book about her father passing, right?
I mean,
she's like the death joke person, but for it to be going on in real time was really hard to watch.
Yeah,
it was funny, but it was brutal.
Yeah, and so
she's the best.
She's
so fucking funny.
And so it's tough to do shows. Everyone just kind of you make your own peace with it, and you say, "Will I do this?" I've canceled some shows that I thought I was supposed to be. As we're recording this, I was supposed to be in Arlington, Texas this weekend, and then just everything started spiking, and I'm like, I can't, and I had to cancel week of, which I hate. I don't want to cancel week of, but...
It's dangerous.
I don't want to...
Was the guy understanding, or was he
bad? Oh, everyone's been cool. Everyone's
like,
been
all
cool.
Right. It's almost like, you know, you caught him. You know? You know? Like, they know.
Yeah. I have to be careful because my dad is a cancer survivor. He's immune compromised, so I don't want to get close to him. My dad told me one time, he's like, oh, no, I'm going out to the store, and he's going to do something. And I went, Dad, stay the fuck home. Like, I'll bring you stuff.
Right.
He's like, nah, I'm just going to go to the store. And I go, Dad, I don't want you to die because of a trend.
Yeah, and people want to go out, though. That's the weird thing. It's not they're not being stupid. They're just like, I'm going nuts.
Yeah, and I
just
get
wanna
that.
Go to the fucking store.
I get that. We're all going nuts.
I'm like that, too. I do almost hospital PPE to go out. I got N95 masks, and I've got a plastic visor just to go to Ralph's.
Yeah, you the whole thing. But and then that's when you have the too long conversation with the with the cashier.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're all just trying to figure it out. It's an insane time to be a comedian. And
the same time to be alive.
Alive.
Certainly, and it's compounded by being an American. And if we're going to get through Woo! This shit. But I mean, there has been some, you know, good news on the treatment and vaccine front. It seems like they're going to get a handle on it if we can just make it through this goddamn winter without fucking morons ruining everything.
I'm trying, and that's one of the other reasons why, like, I canceled everything for the rest of the year when they started saying, you know, we got a vaccine, and it's like, okay, well, I don't want
to made it this far.
Yeah, I don't want to fumble on the 1 yard line. I want to get in. So let's go. Let's get the damn vaccine. I'm not gonna, like, my dad beat cancer. I don't want to be the one that knocks him out.
Well, I'm glad you're taking care of yourself. Congratulations on your baby.
Thanks, man. Well, she, you know, my wife did all the work. I stood there. I coached.
Oh yeah, you were there.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You got to do it, I guess. Huh?
Yeah. It was. It's crazy. You're in that room, and I'm up by my wife's head, just kind of coaching her through it, telling her she's doing great and all that. And then all of a sudden, you hear another voice in the room.
Oh my God.
It's nuts. It's nuts.
Yeah.
And then I know it's been said a million times, but then they just give you the baby and say, all right, go home.
We're going to just take it?
And do what? Like, yeah, yeah. I don't know. We only get you to the door. You gotta figure everything else out.
Right, but now, in terms of, is there some path to doing what you're going to have to do outside of, are you just going to use your own wisdom to bring up a little person, or is there an approach that, you know, is known?
I mean, it's kind of like parenting in general. Y'all just kind of do what you think is right. I mean,
and I get that.
I want to kind of raise her the same way my dad raised me, in that you are aware that you are different. So when someone stares at you or says something, you're not like, what? Why? Like, it's like, no, okay, this is why they're doing this. But then to have the mature response to have a response. And it's going to be rough. You know, there's going to be times where she's going to want to do things that, but at the same time, like, I played a lot of sports as a kid. My mom did not want me to play sports. My dad was like, get him out there, you know? Yeah. And so I at least have that knowledge of, okay, we can do stuff. So if she wants to play soccer or baseball or whatever, great.
Yeah.
Go on out there, do the thing. Good. So it's that. And my wife, in addition to being a behavioral therapist, is also a martial artist, and she wants to teach her how to be a martial artist too.
Great.
So I thought,
why not?
Do that. Fantastic.
You got a plan.
Yeah. It's, but we're all just, the plan changes daily, it seems, with what's going on. You know?
I don't know if how much is going to, I don't know what normal is going to look like, but in terms on the disease front, there is reasons to be a little bit hopeful.
Yeah. And that's, it's weird. It's weird how much hope does work.
Well, like, I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, it's like, it's unnatural. It's probably stupid. Mm-hmm. But what's the alternative? We're fucked, man.
I mean, that is one.
Yeah, but that's what, I do that too.
Yeah.
But that's exhausting.
It is.
Yeah. The best way to go is either have hope, which is maybe silly, or just go like, hey, I got no control. Mm-hmm. Over what happens, and I'm okay right now.
Yeah.
So stay in that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No. Totally. And it's just amazing when, like, a new good news comes out about a vaccine or something, where I go, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're almost there.
Yeah. Come on, we can do it.
Come on,
humans.
and you just want to get you just want to get to that point. I want to go back to watching sports with packed stadiums. You want to,
you
want to hug your friends and family. You want to have parties.
I think that might happen. I wasn't so sure, but it seems like some of these vaccines and the nature of the virus itself is it's sort of a slow evolver. It doesn't mutate too quickly. So we might be able to knock it back.
I hope so, man. Because
gotta work.
As much as you probably enjoy the podcast and are thankful for the podcast, at the same time, I mean,
I miss hanging out at the store.
Yeah,
I miss going out.
Yeah,
I miss that more than I miss doing comedy. I miss just being able to, like, I'm just gonna go over and
it's gonna hang.
Yeah, sit around.
No, there's so many times at the store where you just go and you sit back in either the green room way in the back or in the parking lot.
It's the hallway.
the hallway, like, and I just stare, like, you're hanging out and you're talking.
Yeah.
And then you have a moment where you step back and go, holy shit. Between the five people talking right here, we could sell out a stadium.
Or that one guy can.
Yeah. Well, there's Russell Peters.
Yeah, if we all open for him.
Yeah, if we all open for Rogan, then yes, we could sell out the fucking Staples Center. Yeah. But yeah, like there was a night where it was like it was like Gaffigan and Kreischer and Rogan and like just a bunch and Burr and Regan showed up and everyone was talking and Bert was talking about tour bus problems and everything like that. Everyone's nodding. And then Burr came in and goes, dude, look outside. There's a bunch of fucking Benzes and Teslas. Shut the fuck up. It's so great. Yeah. And those moments are what you miss. And Whitney coming in with barbs and Annie Letterman being awesome. And I miss that. That's why I wanted to get like, I want to get vaccinated just so I could run up to everyone and give them a hug and just be like, I fucking miss you.
Yeah.
I fucking miss you. And
yeah.
Everyone played their part. Everyone has that character that when so-and-so walks in, you're like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
This person's here. They're going to do that thing.
Right. Everyone. Yeah. Because we're all personalities and you know what to expect.
Now.
And you're always going to get a laugh. That's for sure.
Now. When things do get back and you do get back on the road, will you have that thing where even when you're experiencing the hard parts of touring, will you be like, it's not that bad?
Who knows?
You know?
I don't even, like, I'm honestly surprised at how much I don't miss it. You know, I've been doing it most of my life without any break.
Yeah.
And right before the pandemic, days before, I dropped probably the best special I ever did. So there's really
it was good.
Thanks. There's some part of me that just is sort of like, man, maybe I'm done.
Well, I mean.
Maybe I'm all good.
Yeah. I mean.
I got to beat myself up for.
I totally feel you. My second special, I talked about my dad getting cancer and then beating it.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the special, he's in the audience. And I had this moment where I was filming it where I was like, don't look at him. Don't look at him. Don't look at him. And then I look down and I see him and I start crying. And then I started improvising like a thank you to him and just thanking him for everything that he did for me. And then it was so cool because I got that moment.
Yeah.
Like I got that moment. Then now that's recorded. And
right.
Like I have that. After that, I was like, well, what am I going to do now?
Yeah, I think I'm fixed. I think I'm all good.
What's
that special called?
It's called Daddy Issues. And it's streaming on Amazon Prime.
Oh, good.
And so people could go and watch that there. The craziest part about that, and I couldn't find a way to, that whole special, at least the dad parts, was almost written just in one night because I was at the Comedy Works in Denver.
Yeah.
Or not the Downtown Club, the Landmark one, and I was in the green room and I knew that my dad was going in for a test.
Yeah.
And this is going to be where we find out, like, is he okay? Or do we got to go for more chemo? And that would essentially be not like it's just for show at that point.
Yeah.
And I haven't gotten a phone call all day. And then I'm getting ready and my phone rings and I look down, and it's my mom. So I go like, okay, it's the call. And I answer. And the first words she says are, he's in remission.
Whoa.
And I just burst out crying.
Yeah.
The other comics know that I've been telling them I'm finding out this stuff today. The other comics in the room see me get a call and then burst out crying. So they're probably like, oh God,
he died.
It's the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
And then literally as I'm crying, Chuck Roy is on stage and he just goes, please welcome Brad.
Oh, no.
I had to go on stage. And then like I go on stage and I've got tears streaming down my face and I can't just go, well, let's talk about what's in the news. Like, I can't.
Yeah.
I had to address it.
Right.
So then I just started talking about it.
Oh, wow.
And I hadn't talked about it the entire time he was going through it.
And you were getting some laughs?
Yeah. And then I thought, ooh, there's something.
It's interesting here. That's when it really happens, where you kind of got no choice. And you're in it. And then you realize, like, our skill set is getting laughs, right? So like, but that's how I write like that all the time. But like that, you don't know why, but you know when you're up there, if you're going to be talking about anything, the impulse in you
from 15 years of working. Is that like, well, I'm going to find the laugh.
Yeah,
that,
that's I'll figure it out.
Right, that's going to happen innately.
Yeah.
I got to get there.
Yeah, a acting coach gave me a set of line one time that I thought was so great, where they said, desperate people get super creative super fast. And it's it's really accurate.
Where and if you're charming and full of shit, then, then you got everything you need.
Yeah, I just got to work on the charm part. But
charming.
Thank you. It's true. And those are some of those moments, and that's what I can't wait to get back to. Because right now we're all kind of stuck in a limbo where it's like we're not really working on material.
I know it's hard, and also, but the other thing that's gone is like we're also not competing with each other. So like there's a, it's a little reprieve. Yeah. Now when you're talking about driving shows, I'm like, no, fuck that. Do I gotta be a? You know,
is that something I gotta do now?
I gotta start doing that now. God damn it,
Gan, if you want,
I know.
Go out, go,
of course
go,
I can.
Go out there with Kreischer.
Yeah,
come on.
I take my shirt off with Bert. I don't know if Bert's fans. I don't know, but Bert's fans wouldn't know what to do with me. It's like a lot of those guys, like, you know, even Rogan's guys, I can get them laughing, but you know, and they respect me, but they're sort of like, I don't really want to hang out too long. You know,
that's so weird. It's so weird for me to hear you say that, because I think you're one of the guys. I think you're one of the top.
I am. Yeah. Well, people. I'm my guy. Like, it's like, you know what I mean? I'm like, I'm one of the guys, but I got my people.
Sure.
Know?
Well, like,
and also I can make anyone laugh. I'm a pro.
Yeah.
But I'm a little. I'm just not quite guy enough. Do you know,
man,
what I mean?
It's a crazy thing, because like I watched the Comedy Store doc, loved it. Mm. But and then of course you talk about. You talk about competing. I'm in my head going, why didn't they talk to me? You know,
of course.
But then
I just talked to Binder. There's plenty of people that are pissed off.
Sure. I'm not mad at
the whole history of comics.
Yeah,
there's mad at
so many stories that you can't tell.
Look at the number of names on that wall and count the number of people in the actual doc.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
The ones that aren't dead on the wall, they're pissed a little bit.
Yeah. So I was like looking at that, like, oh man, I guess I'm not one of those cool Comedy Store people. But then it's like you are one of those people and you still have thoughts.
I have a certain amount of self-acceptance.
Okay.
You know, but I do know that there's part of me like why can't I, you know, why am I not an arena act? It's like, well, dude, that's pretty clear. You never were gunning for it. And what would an arena of you look like?
An arena Marin.
Well, how many, you know, I mean, like, I'm kind of I'm a specific thing in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm fine. I've got just enough people to make a living. But, like, what am I going to tell? If I'm attracting an arena of people, there's a lot of trouble people.
Yeah, there's definitely some comics where you go like, yeah, I could see that making 12,000 people laugh.
Yeah.
You know, like that
right.
kind of big energy.
I have just the right size of, you know, where I'm going. I'm happy with where I'm at, but and I accept that, and it is truly, you know, I'm grateful, and I do think I've hit my level in terms of, and it's a good level. But like, if there's more levels, you know, you're going to have your days where you're like, "Nah, fuck. Where's my plane?"
Yeah. I don't know, man. I will say that one thing that having the family gives you is that none of that shit matters.
So I got to go get me. I'll go get myself a family. Then.
Go get one. Then you won't compare. Then I'll just come home. I'll look at my wife. I look at the Asian dwarf baby, or the ADB as we call her.
Yeah.
And I just go, okay. They're eating.
But okay,
life's good.
Okay. All right. So it's never like, oh fuck, now I got to feed you guys.
I mean, sometimes. Sometimes I want to put the Asian dwarf baby to work and be like, hey, can you pull your weight? Do something here?
Yeah, well, you've got time.
One day.
Yeah. Thanks, Brett.
Hey, thanks, buddy.
Brad Williams, funny fella, nice guy. Come see him when he comes near you to do the thing. I can't play guitar. I don't got it in me. I don't know if that guy, do I have music in me? I can play harmonica a little, just a little. Ha Monkey, LaFonda, cat angels everywhere.